Blog Talk Radio. Happy Sunday. Welcome to Just Believe Radio on the RightStream Network. I am your host, Lisa Tarvis, every Sunday at 1 p.m. We have a show called Just Believe about lots of different topics. I myself am a metaphysician, board-certified holistic health practitioner, intuitive author, and of course now a radio host. So we have special guests every week covering lots of different topics, such as something along the lines of something along the spirituality line, metaphysical line. We cover holistic health topics as well, metaphysics and even paranormal activity, which is really, really fun. So, I have a really great guest on today, and I'm really, really excited about today because, as everybody knows, I have a fondness for angels. So today our guest is Tom Moore, and Tom is an author, speaker, and entertainment industry CEO who distributes motion pictures and TV programs internationally. He brings keen knowledge to how requesting benevolent outcomes can be used in both business affairs and in one's personal life. He says that requesting benevolent outcomes for over 14 years has resulted in leading to a gentler, less stressful, and less fearful life. Who couldn't go for one of those less stressful, less fearful lives? He has a couple of books. Actually, he's got a few books, but the one that we're focusing on first is going to be a book called The Gentle Way, and we'll have him talk about The Gentle Way, but it's The Gentle Way, a self-help guide for those who believe in angels. So I'm really interested to see how where the connection is and with angels, and we're going to get him on the line with us right now and see what he can tell us. Tom, are you there with me?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you great. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for being on the show. I really appreciate it. And I'm really excited about talking about all of your books. Now, you've written, how many books in total have you written?
Oh, well, there's three that are either published or about to be published. And then I actually had another one that is an ebook form on my website called The Great Quakes of 2008, which didn't happen, but still will. But so that has to do with earthquakes.
Okay, all right. Now, you wrote The Gentle Way and then The Gentle Way 2, which is about the benevolent outcomes, correct?
Yes, The Gentle Way 2 basically was a compilation of tons of stories that were sent to me from all over the world, from people that were starting to request benevolent outcomes, and they were telling me their success stories, and so I was able to put them into a book.
All right, well, let's start with the most obvious question. By the way, we are going to take callers today, and the chat room is also open. If you want to call in and ask Tom a question, call 347-945-7246 and press 1. That's 347-945-7246, and you will show up in my queue, and we will get to you as soon as there's an appropriate moment in the show. Tell me what a benevolent outcome is.
Sure. A benevolent outcome is when you request something that you'd like to have, but you turn it over to what I believe is regarding angel. You can you can believe anything that you wish, whether it you think it's God or Jesus or Archangel Michael or Muhammad or Allah or a Buddhist deity or whatever. It doesn't matter because it works, and it works perfectly. And I've never been able to say that about any modality that I had tried out before over many, many years. So basically you just say, I request a most benevolent outcome for blank, 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 and thank you. And if it's in your soul contract, if I should say, as long as it's within the boundaries of your soul contract, you will have help in getting that. It may be a simple request like a parking space, or it could be something very, very important to you like a mate or a perfect job or a perfect house, things like that.
So do you think does this link to the law of attraction at all?
It's a great step forward than the law of attraction. One of my readers of my weekly newsletter said, Tom, you know, the law of attraction is like driving an old Ford Pinto, and requesting benevolent outcomes is like driving a Ferrari. Both may get you there, but the Ferrari will get you there a lot faster. And that's how powerful this little simple spiritual tool is. It is so simple to use that anyone, no matter where you are on the path, we'll call it, okay, whether you've been into metaphysics for a long, long time or just starting out, it doesn't matter because it works, and it works perfectly.
That sounds really, really awesome. So you're just saying that to request benevolent outcome, all you have to do is just say basically the benevolent outcome, meaning that you're asking for what's best for your soul? Is that what you're...
Well, it can be anything, okay? And that's the beauty of it because, I mean, I still get emails every single week. In fact, my publisher has told me that they're going to put together a third General Wave book with more of these compilation stories because what happens is that every week people email me these stories from all over the world. Like this past week, I think I had stories from like Indonesia, Malaysia, the UK. I mean, it really is all over the place. And so I put these into a weekly block. And then at each month, just before the 15th of the month, I compile all these and I send these to my publisher of my books, who also publishes the Sedona Journal of Emergence. And they, depending on space issues, they will have 3 to 4 pages of these stories each month in their magazine. So they're going to basically take all these stories from the last 2 or 3 years and put them into chapters. There'll be a chapter like on work, a chapter on your house, a chapter on maybe hospitals, medical. These chapters will be similar to book 2, where I was able to have stories all arranged in chapters with the same topic.
So people are requesting benevolent outcomes for everything. So there's no reason to only think that you should request them for something that's really important. Like when you said the parking space thing, you hear that all the time with the law of attraction and things like that. Can you really ask for a benevolent outcome from your angel? I agree with you. I believe you're talking to your guardian angel at that point. Mm-hmm. So is it okay to ask for something as simple as a good parking spot because you're running late or you don't feel like walking anymore?
Oh, absolutely. And if you're running late, you can even request a compression of time in order to get to where you're going on time. And you'll find if you say, I request the most benevolent outcome to arrive on time at such and such a place, or you say, I request a compression in time until 2 p.m. if you're supposed to be somewhere at 2 p.m. and you know it's normally a 20 or 25 minute drive and you've only got 15 minutes to get there, you'll find as long as you don't look at your watch, as long as you don't look at the clock in the car, you will arrive like 1 or 2 minutes early.
Are you asking for the specifics, or are you just saying I'm asking for a benevolent outcome to allow me to get to work on time today? Are you narrowing it down to saying, okay, can you compress time? Do you leave it up to them to decide how to make it happen?
Yeah, but I mean, you can say that, and yes, when your guardian angel comes into play, you have to understand, when I started out, my idea of a guardian angel was like Clarence for A Wonderful Life, okay?
Yeah.
Just a little soul trying to get wings, okay. I've since found out that guardian angels are golden light beings. Now, why are they called golden light beings? It's because they are so kind of ancient and so knowledgeable that they emanate a golden light. And these whole souls that we call guardian angels are so powerful that, as an example, my guardian angel, who I call Theo, and I asked him what to call him. He said, your vocal cords are not made to pronounce angelic names. So he said, you can call me Tom, Dick, or Harry, but Tom may be a little difficult in your meditations. He was being funny, okay?
Right.
And so my guardian angel handles over 19,000 whole souls, who each one of the whole souls are having an average of 6 to 12 soul fragments having lives on Earth. Not only each of these lives has 12 parallel lives, or 12 timelines, as they're called, but all your lives are going on at the same time, because time is an illusion to us. We're in a space-time continuum. And so each of these soul fragments are having 600 to 800 lives, and the guardian angel is handling all those lives all at the same time.
You know, it's so funny because you sent me that information recently about timelines, and I read it, and I'm like, wow, this is giving me a headache because it's really, really complicated. And it's like, it's one of those things that even me as a metaphysician, and been, you know, and I've been studying metaphysics my whole life, I'm reading this and I'm like, wow, this is the part where this is when I get lost when you start talking about different things happening at the same time, because there really is no time. I sit there and I'm like, wow, this is just, I think that's my limit right now. I don't think I can go that far. But I started reading it. I got like into page two and I'm like, oh, okay, I'm out. I'm done.
That's why I gave, if you read the whole thing, because that was an excerpt from my book, as I recall. I think that's what I gave you. And it has to do with my third book. But the way I explain it, when you start getting it, and we're kind of jumping around here, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I'm sure we've got time.
Everybody's used to that for me.
Okay. But when you get into timelines, there are 12 timelines. These are 12 parallel lives, and they are all at different frequencies. And the frequencies are divided into fours and then subdivided into twos. So, as an example, we're on timeline number 6, which is a middle frequency. And so timelines 1, 2, 3, and 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 are all coupled together, and there's sort of big breaks in the frequencies in between those three groups of four, and then they're subdivided into twos. So 1 and 2, 3 and 4, 5 and 6, 7 and 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 are all, again, coupled together. So I give people an example personally, okay? In my timelines, on timelines 1 and 2, I have died, okay? That's because in 2006, I experienced congestive heart failure on most of my timelines. I'm not sure about the uppers, but on timelines 1 and 2, I didn't get past that. I died. Okay, on timelines 3 and 4, about 25 or 30 years ago, we started a film and TV distribution business. Well, before that, we owned a we owned an international wholesale tour company, my wife and I, and but I stayed in the tour business on timelines 1 through 4, and on timelines 3 and 4, my wife and I divorced after 18 years, and both of us remarried. On timelines 5, 6, 7, and 8, we're still happily married, okay? And on timelines 9, 10, 11, and 12, 12 is a non-physical one we can get into in a minute. But on those timelines, when I went to TCU, I was really pushed on the lower timelines to get a degree in finance, in business, BBA in finance. On the upper timelines, I got a degree in English, and I started writing science fiction stories and eventually spiritual stories. On these timelines, I got a degree in finance. On the upper timelines, I became a writer full-time. And so I asked, well, you know, I went into the Army as a second lieutenant as my ROTC obligation. And Theo told me, he said, well, on the upper timelines, you didn't, because Vietnam never happened. The energies were so much more easy that they were able to easily resolve their conflict, and there was never a war. Very important, okay? So the lower timelines, the lower you get, the more difficult your lives are. And so that's sort of the way it works.
Wow. That's, again, I mean, I it's fascinating, and it's amazing that anyone can actually understand this. And I mean,
well, that's why I give a personal, so that people see in one life how different it can be, where on two timelines you're dead, on two of the other timelines I'm still in the tour business, on these timelines I'm in the International Film and TV, and on the upper timelines, I'm just a writer, except that my work is widely disseminated all over the place.
So are these timelines actual parallel lives that we're living?
Exactly, parallel lives. You can look at it like matrices if you want to, that each one of these is a different frequency. It's the same person, but just having different experiences.
Wow. See, that's a little too deep for even me, I think, to grasp. I mean, it's like, you know, I think I cannot get any deeper, and then something comes along and I'm like, whoa, I've got a lot to learn.
When I started out with timelines, I started asking about timelines because if you've ever heard of Steve Rother, who channels the group, he was talking about two timelines, our timeline and another one, crossing and melding together. And so I started asking questions about that. And so the more questions I asked, the farther down the rabbit hole I went, so to speak. And that's, you know, that's where I started. That's what happens. When I start on these paths, I'll start asking one or two questions, and it gets to be a whole chapter in the book, or sometimes a whole book, as it happened with my third one there.
Wow, it's amazing, and it's so fascinating, and it's like I think it's a whole show all by itself. I mean, it's so for me, because I personally have so many questions alone, and I can't even imagine what my listeners would be feeling like, because I mean, there's so many questions that you could ask about this, and so you received this information about these timelines through your guardian angel, who you call Thea, whether or not that's his name. I get the whole name thing. You can't ever understand your guardian angel's name.
Right. So all you do is just say, guardian angel, you say this out loud, guardian angel, what name shall I call you? And you may get a name immediately in your mind, or it may take you a couple of weeks like it did me. And suddenly one day, Theo popped up, and I said, oh, okay. I never had kind of heard that name. Little did I know that Theo was the Greek word for God, because I have a friend that's a Baptist minister. He said, Tom, how can you call your guardian angel Theo? That's the Greek word for God. And I said, I said, Jerry, I didn't take Greek in school, so I didn't know that. So anyway.
Yeah. Well, exactly. But it's what came to you, so you have to, you know, you have to expect that there's a reason for that. But so the timelines thing, okay, that we're talking about here, this is another book you're writing, written what?
No, eventually I'm going to have a book probably called something like Guardian Angel 101 or something like that. Okay, and that will be more thoroughly covered. But I do have a chapter in my new book on timelines because when I started communicating with this ET, who's a member of my soul group or cluster, as it's called. Remember, I said each of us are soul fragments that are part of a soul group or cluster. Okay,
right.
And I was asking a lot of questions because my ET buddy, my brother on another planet, is going to be contacting me on upper timelines and one lower timeline. So so I had questions about that, and that's why timelines got into that book.
Are you aware of these other timelines?
No,
I mean,
and
be living a timeline and be aware of the other timelines that are going on at the same time.
As you know, one of the things that happens when you start requesting benevolent outcomes is that it does start making you more aware of things that are happening. And so, yes, when my wife was very strong in saying, we've got to sell this tour business, because at that time we were in another recession. And as an employee would leave us, you know, for, you know, to move away or to get married or whatever, a better job, we wouldn't rehire because our company was shrinking due to the recession. And so she said, we can't go back to having to do all this work ourselves. And I said, you're right. And so when we sold the company, I was still, keep in mind, I've been recording my dreams since 1979. I was still having very strong dreams where I was still running tours and making up tours and everything. So I kind of knew long before I ever started asking questions about timelines, I knew that somewhere there was probably a parallel life where I was still in the travel business, okay? So for anybody recording your dreams, you can get an eye on your other parallel lives in many cases.
Wow. Well, again, we'll have you back on another day to talk more about this, because this, I think we could go on and get a billion questions just on this. And
well, one thing I'll go ahead and mention, because I'd brought it up and then I said we'd cover this, is that timeline number 12 is non-physical. And so I thought about that for a long time. You have to understand, I ask what are called fill-in-the-gap questions. And also people will send me questions that will be fill-in-the-gaps. You know, it will be on a topic one day. Maybe it's orbs, like we'll cover a little bit later, or something like that. And, you know, I'll ask two or three questions. And then somebody will ask more questions that will fill in gaps, as we call them. And so I was told that timeline 12 was non-physical. And finally, one day, you know, after a year or two, I said, okay, why is timeline 12 non-physical? And Theo says that timeline 12 is what your soul, as some people would call your oversoul, but it's your soul, okay? It's what your soul feels would be the perfect life, okay? And all the other timeline lives that you're having are compared against that one. And so that's why it is non-physical.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes sense, sort of. I'm going to go with the sort of, but yeah, I get it. I'm going to have to read that entire thing you sent me and send me more, and I'll get you back on another time so we can talk about it more. Because I think, you know, there are people that are so fascinated by it, including me, because it's so I just, it's so beyond what is, like, for you, you seem to have a simple, basic, common sense sort of understanding of it. For some of us, it doesn't make sense because we think of time being linear. And as much as I know that it's not, you know, I mean, I know that it's not because of practicing Reiki and being able to send Reiki energy into the future and into the past and into, you know, all these different, distantly and all these things. I get it, but I don't get it. So I think it's a fact.
Another way of looking at it would be, imagine there are 12 tubes of energy all running beside each other, but they sort of weave, you know, sometimes they'll be closer to another timeline, another times farther away. Nothing's perfect. Okay. And these are tubes of energy. And because your soul wants to have the most experiences one life can give it for its learning purposes, then it has these lives at different frequencies, different energies, so that it can learn the most from every life that it has on Earth.
Yeah,
it's like getting the biggest bang for your buck.
And when you get into the tubes thing, that reminds me of the other thing that I want to talk to you so much about that you said, which was orbs, which I really think is going to fascinate a lot of our listeners too, because there are a lot of people that love the concept of orbs. And they take pictures and they're like, what the heck is that? And I know this because I get so many of my own clients that come in and they're asking me all the time, what the heck is in this picture? And, you know, and I look at it and sometimes I'm like, it just looks like maybe a little light off of something, you know, and then there are other times I'm like, wow, there is no explanation for that. So I want to talk to you about that too. We already have callers lining up here. And I want to get to somebody that's been on with us since the very beginning of the show from the 407 area code and see whether or not they're just here to listen or whether they had a question. So if you can just hang on with me for a minute, let's find out who our caller is from 407 area code.
This is Vaughn. Am I on the air?
Yeah, you are. Yeah. Hey, Vaughn, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm calling from a sleepy little town in Central Florida, where I'm the youngest one in the town, and I'm 56. So,
hey, listen. I hope you're near that little town near Tampa, where somebody just won $590 million.
Zephyr Hills. I'm probably about 40 miles away. I'm looking him up this afternoon to become his best friend, no doubt.
There you go.
Seriously, yeah. Does that mean I didn't win the Powerball again?
Can I talk about something that brings up, because in my first book I have a whole chapter on games of chance, okay, on requesting benevolent outcomes. And people have asked me, gosh, you know, I've requested benevolent outcomes for winning the lottery and nothing's going to happen. And Theo tells me that people that come into a lot of money, whether it be a stock option suddenly scores or a lottery ticket or an inheritance or whatever it happens to be where there's instant wealth, that is a soul template, okay? That's something that for most of us, we don't have that template, all right? So it's like requesting a benevolent outcome. If I were playing the lottery again, as I did in sort of my early days, I would request a benevolent outcome to win one of the smaller prizes, because I found that people that request it when they're in bingo games and things like that, as an example, in my first book I mentioned that my family and I were on a cruise of the Caribbean, and on the last day of the cruise they had a coverall bingo game, and I was requesting a benevolent outcome for winning it. I won half of an $8,400 pot. Okay, so those are kind of smaller things that you can kind of ask for that would be in the realm of your soul contract and not have to go into the realm of a template, if you will.
Interesting.
So do you guys know each other? Tom
no.
and Vaughn? Okay, no, this is Von Goodwin. Von Goodwin is also an author and a radio host, and I'm on his show frequently, and he was my first guest on my show. And Von and I do a lot of work together. We're very close, good friends, and he does Living the Question Radio on Blog Talk, and he's on. Well, you're on Sundays, right? No, you went to Wednesdays now, right?
Wednesdays 10 Eastern. That's right. Eastern. That's right.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, he's you're about to publish your third book, I guess, right, Von?
That's right. That's right. And really, the reason I called in is that when the guest was talking about the 12 lines or parallel lives or whatever, and certainly you two are way above my head in understanding as well, but I just want to make a comment and listen to your comments about it, is that the more that I read about things and the more I experience life, these ancient spiritual wisdoms, the new science, if you will, the things that we're discovering, and then just my daily life seems to all point out that maybe there is something to these multiple parallel lives, like in string theory, in quantum physics, this example that your guest is talking about today. I fully believe that we do have these parallel lives, and that I think we experience things at different levels, and I can't explain it like you guys. So it's more of a comment than it is a question. So if you're looking for affirmation, I'm hanging with you there. I think you're right. I think you're right on.
Good.
I
will mention that what I do, and we haven't kind of gotten into this, is that I have what I call an active meditation. Now, some people call it channeling, but I don't, because, and in fact, my publisher, who publishes a magazine filled with channeled articles, the Sedona Journal of Emergence, she doesn't call what I do channeling either. And what I do is in active meditation, I put myself into a light alpha state. It's not something that you go deep in, because if you go too deep, I call it tripping out, because you go into what's called a theta state. And if you stay in this alpha state, I get these questions from all over the world to ask in my meditations. And so as an example, I did one this morning where I had a bunch of questions that ranged from talking about the heavy elements in Comet Ison. Are there the same elements in coronal mass ejections? And it goes on about earthquakes and whatever. People about asking about why the stones move in Death Valley. So whatever people want to ask, they can send in the question, and eventually I'll get to it. And when I'm in this light alpha state, I am sitting at a computer, and I have typed the first question in, and then I put myself into the light alpha state, and then I say, okay, Gaia, are you there, or Theo, are you there? And I receive what are called thought packets. That's what Theo calls them. They're thought packets where you get them through your right brain into your left, and they're filtered according to your belief system, according to your knowledge, and so on. So if there might be 10 people that ask the same question and get 10 different answers. So anyway, that's how I get what I receive, are these thought packets, and it works not only if you're communicating with spirit, or if you're communicating with someone halfway across the universe, like I have been doing with my brother on another planet who's having a life on the Sirius B system water planet. Okay.
Fascinating.
Very cool.
I mean,
I'm gonna hang up, Lisa, and listen off. Wine, if you will, but this is a very fascinating topic. Enjoy.
Yeah, I know. It's getting more interesting than even I expected. It's cool.
Yeah, well, there you go.
All right, thanks for calling in, Von.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Talk to you soon. Okay, so
now,
all right.
And I might mention, in continuing on with this one theme for just a second.
Go ahead. Yep,
anyone can do this. If you already meditate, if you make sure you don't go into a deep meditative state where you're not able in other words, all you're seeing is a light or something like that. That's too deep to do what I do and what you can do. Because I've taught this in my workshops. I show people, I put them under, I keep them in a light alpha state. 20-25% of the people can get something, and, you know, even whole paragraphs at times. Other people will only get one or two words, and some people don't get anything. It takes
right.
practice.
It does.
And you have to say, okay, I'm willing to do it. And that's when I started out and was just starting to communicate. My reception level was down at like 15-30%. And each time I would ask, well, am I getting any better? Am I getting any better? I'd keep hearing the same thing over and over and over again. Practice, practice, practice. And the
right.
more that you do these meditations, the higher level of reception you'll get.
I think with the clients that I have that I teach meditation to, I find that most of them, a lot of them want to give up because they're like, I can't do this. I can't do this. Like, it's not magic. It does happen. It just doesn't, it's practice. It's something that you learn how to do and do well. And, you know, and it's not about blanking the mind. It's about quieting the mind. And you know, and so it's, people, you could write a book on that. I'm telling you, you're just having a basic understanding of meditation for a lot of people. It's very difficult for them, you know, so it's
right.
not always so easy. So anyway, I want to get into so many things. But tell me more.
Even on if you start requesting benevolent outcomes, one of the benefits of requesting benevolent outcomes is it starts raising your vibrational level a little every day. I didn't understand that when I started requesting these benevolent outcomes when I discovered this 15 years ago. But I believe in requesting those benevolent outcomes, it allowed me to reach a level where it was fairly easy for me to communicate. Because the first time I communicated was in Sedona, Arizona, and at a Dick Sutphin Increasing Your Psychic Ability seminar, and he put us under one day to do automatic writing. And instead of doing that, I decided to communicate with or try to communicate with an Indian American Indian shaman that had been channeled for me living in the 1600s. Keep in mind, all your lives are going on at the same time. So here was a live person I was communicating with in the 1600s in Western United States. And so when his name was Reveals the Mysteries, that's the English translation, and I said, I said, Reveals the Mysteries, are you there? And he said, yes, I am, Tom. And I said, wow, this is neat. And so I asked him, why am I the only guy out here pushing benevolent outcomes? He said, Tom, he said, you're an Indian shaman living at the same time period I am. Your name is Stillwater, and you had decided to incarnate into the 20th and 21st centuries in order to reintroduce people to the gentle way. So the first time I ever spoke to him, I got the name of the book.
What does that mean? The gentle way is what?
The gentle way is requesting these benevolent outcomes because it gives you a gentler way to live, less stress, less fear, more success. You still have challenges in your life, but as Theo explains it, he said when you're requesting benevolent outcomes, if you're not requesting benevolent outcomes, you come to a challenge and it's like a brick wall that you've got to climb over. If you're requesting benevolent outcomes, you still have the same challenge, but it becomes a big speed bump. So it makes the challenges of life easier to get through.
Okay, so any time that someone is having any kind of challenge or difficulty or maybe even struggling with making a decision in their life,
yes.
They can just ask, and I'm big with the guardian angel thing as well, with asking the angels for help and for assistance in these things. But it, like you said earlier, if you want to ask God or if you want to ask whoever your higher power is, You know, that it all works the same. So you're asking for them for a benevolent outcome to the situation that you happen to be going through at that time. And then do you feel like you have to, at that point, stop trying to control the outcome and turn it over?
Yeah, you just release it. That's what you do. So as an example, I just to give you an idea of some of the important things I've used benevolent outcomes for, I personally and my company were sued for $1 million by some Mexican producers, okay? That was because of the Spanish network I had sold a number of movies to did not follow my what I had in the contract for them. So they sued me for $1 million. They sued the TV network for $5 million, and they sued another distributor in Houston for $1 million. And so this went on for over a year or so, and I was requesting benevolent outcomes for this. Finally, we get to a mediation, and my Houston attorney is saying, Tom, you know, you have to understand, you're probably going to wind up having to pay some money. And I said, look, I'm requesting benevolent outcomes. And he's thinking, sure. And sure enough, it wound up that the TV network paid out, I think it was like $400,000 or $500,000. The distributor in Houston paid out $100,000, and I paid zero. Okay.
You gotta love that.
So that's one important thing, because I guarantee I'd have been out of business. That would have been it for me. Because you know, I just have a small business. I'm not one of the big guys. And then also when I had congestive heart failure that I mentioned before in 2006, I was supposed to be going down to Houston to give a talk about the General Way at a church down there, but I was having this croupy cough, and so I went to my respiratory doctor because I'd grown up in a smoker's family and my lungs weren't that fantastic. And I said, Doc, please prescribe, you know, one of those inhalers for me so I can clear up this cough, because I've got a gig I got to go to. And he checked me out, and he said, no, Tom. He said, I'm not going to prescribe that for you. He said, you've got congestive heart failure. You're going to go downstairs and check yourself into the hospital. So I said, well, I'm glad I wore my clean undies today. I did that. The first procedure they tried on me was to put me under and shock my heart to try and get it back into a normal rhythm, because it was beating at like 130 or 40 a minute, and that didn't work. And I'm not worried at all. I said, well, that's okay, because I requested a benevolent outcome on this thing. And so three or four days later, because this was over the weekend and no doctors work on the weekends, the second procedure, they sent catheters up through a vein to my heart and cauterized the little misfiring cells, and that was good, but I was on some heavy heart medicines, and slowly but surely these kind of weaned away. But also it had a side effect, because it was making me very forgetful, and I'd be in the middle of a business meeting and I'd forget where we were, and it was very embarrassing. So I said, Doc, you know, why is this happening? And he said, oh, it's a side effect of these drugs. He said, I can put you on another drug, and we have to put you in the hospital for 2 days because it's such a strong drug. The FDA says we have to monitor you, or I can do another procedure that's 80% successful, but if it's successful, you'll be off all the drugs. I said, give me door number two.
Right.
And so sure enough, you know, and I'm laughing with the nurses. Somebody brought in food, you know, for the gang, and I said, you didn't bring me any, or, you know, we were just joking around. I was absolutely calm, had absolutely no fear of the procedure. And that's what requesting benevolent outcomes will do for you.
Right. So it took your fear, and you just knew that everything was going to be okay. You know, it was
absolutely.
It comes down to, again, having faith, and that's, you know, not always easy for people, but we like to control.
You gain faith by requesting these mundane things like the parking spaces, a seat on a bus or a subway, you know, you drive to work, or having a good work day if you're in sales, you know, getting good commissions. I mean, you build this up over time by the mundane requests where you get
right.
immediate feedback on the same day that you request it, and it makes it a habit, first of all, so that when something happens where you're truly in danger, it's prevented me from being involved in two car wrecks over the last 15 years, the last one within the last year, where I wound up 6 feet away from a wreck that had just happened in front of me. So, I mean, you know, these are – I don't go outside the house without requesting vanilla outcome for my drive to wherever I'm going and coming back to my home. I don't. It's just automatic with me. And
can you
and
ever,
it's like,
you,
go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Do you ever think that you can just ask, like, a benevolent outcome for, like, the rest of your life? Just be like, okay, every situation, just do it one time, you know? Every situation
yeah.
that comes up, every challenge that comes up, I want a benevolent outcome for all those situations?
No.
That doesn't
no.
work?
No.
There's no shortcut.
Theo explains, he said, you have to request specific things for you. And if you want a benevolent outcome for someone else, let's just say, you know, maybe you have a brother-in-law that is having a problem with drugs or alcohol or something. It's a benevolent prayer that you say, which is a little different. And keep in mind, I was inspired of how to say these because in my first book, benevolent prayers were called living prayers, and there were all sorts. They were all over the place. And I kept thinking about, you know, I got to make this easier for everybody to remember. And so I was inspired, again, to make it simple. So you just simply say, I ask any and all beings to assist my brother-in-law, John, in finding the best treatments for his condition, and may the results be even better than I can hope for or expect. Thank you. So
right.
there you've said something. It's called a benevolent prayer. And it doesn't go to your guardian angel. It goes to a whole different set of angels. And I said, I asked Theo, I said, well, are they golden light beings too? And he said, no, they're younger souls, but he says they're eager. And there's over a million of these whole souls handling all the prayers that everyone says on earth, all in these 12 parallel lives and each of these 600 to 800 lives that each of us have.
Wow, that's amazing. I love it. I love the whole concept of this because it's so nice. And you, this is not something that you need someone's permission to ask for a benevolent outcome for them. Like in so many other situations, you can just ask for a benevolent outcome for someone that you even in a situation when you don't even know them, like in a situation, you know, you see something horrible happening on TV, a missing child or whatever. Can you then ask for that a benevolent outcome for them without them feeling, you know, without having to have their permission?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
I like that.
I mean, it can be for animals. It can be for missing children. You know, I ask any and all beings to help in finding, you know, Mary who's lost. Thank you. You know, whatever the
right.
child's name or the person that's been kidnapped or whatever. Speaking of the kidnappings, one of the things I asked just in the it might have been in this last newsletter. I can't remember. I think it was my weekly newsletters that people can find on my website at www.thegentlewaybook.com. Okay, on these this weekly newsletter, I said, well, you know, I read or saw on TV that there are 34 other girls missing in the same area of Cleveland. I said, is there someone else out there that are you know, kidnapping and holding these girls? And Theo told me, he said, no. He said that, yes, there is another person out there that's kidnapping them, but they kill them. He said mm-hmm. that this person will not be found, will not be discovered for some time, but will eventually be caught.
Wow. Wow. Then look what just happened, you know, so that's amazing. Anyone, just another, giving the phone number out again, anybody who has any questions, we're talking to Tom Moore. He is the author, he's an author, a speaker, and also in the entertainment business, which is fascinating too. He's got a few books out, The Gentle Way, A Self-Help Guide for Those Who Believe in Angels, and The Gentle Way 2, which is The Story Continues. And then he's got a couple new things coming out. Well, one specifically, which is about extraterrestrial contact. So this is, I want to touch on that. But before we touch on that, again, I didn't give the phone number, 347-945-7246. Again, that's 347-945-7246. If you want to ask Tom a question, press 1 and you'll be in the queue, and we will get to you as soon as we can. And again, Tom's website, by the way, is www.thegentlewaybook.com. And you can find out all about, you know, what everything he's got going on with different things, with all the different things he's working on. Then I need to take a short break, Tom, and then what I'm going to do is I want to talk about orbs, because you sent me some fascinating information about orbs, and I know I've got some listeners who are going to love that part. And then we definitely want to touch on your latest book, which is the ET Contact, which I think is also fascinating. So if everybody can hold on with me for a minute, we're going to take a short commercial break, and we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Daria Ann, author and founder of the RightStream Radio Network. If you're an author, writer, blogger, or just someone who enjoys reading and learning, I hope you'll tune in to our inspiring, insightful, and educational programs. Every Sunday, join author and metaphysician Lisa Tarvez for Just Believe at 1 p.m. Eastern, when she explores a variety of spiritual topics, including alternative healing modalities. A gifted intuitive from a young age, Lisa's book, entitled Just Believe, chronicles her journey from a childhood of seeing and communicating with angels to a career in which she uses her talents to help others emotionally, spiritually, and physically. Each week, she interviews experts in the fields of personal growth, spiritual development, and alternative medicine. Military Mondays with author and military historian John D. Gresham analyzes current events and issues from the perspective of the United States military. Tune in at 1 p.m. Eastern every Monday when John, author of such books as Uncommon Valor and journalist for the Defense Media Network, interviews accomplished guests on important topics like national security and defense and global terrorism. RightStream Tuesdays with Daria Ann airs at 1 p.m. Eastern and welcomes authors in diverse genres, including romance, drama, military history, spirituality, and politics. We also speak social, discussing the benefits and pitfalls of social media platforms and the numerous and plentiful publishing formats now available with various experts in order to help other authors navigate through new technology to reach higher levels of success. During every broadcast, we welcome your calls at 347-945-7246. And of course, the chat room is always open. Can't listen live? No worries. Just go to blogtalkradio.com/rightstream to listen to the archives. And be sure to join us for our weekly Thursday RightStream Twitter chat at 11 a.m. Eastern using the hashtag RightStream on Twitter. Rejoice in the flow of creativity with the RightStream Radio Network and the RightStream Twitter chat.
Hi, this is Jennifer Coolidge. The American Heart Association says the disco song Stayin' Alive is the near-perfect beat for hands-only CPR. If you see a teen or adult collapse from cardiac arrest, you only need 2 steps to help save a life. Call 911 and push hard and fast in the center of the chest to the beat of the song Stayin' Alive. Disco is back and it's saving lives. To learn more, go to heart.org/hands-only-CPR.
Nationally supported by the WellPoint Foundation.
These are the sounds of someone taking their eyes off the road. Texting while driving is more than distracting. It's dangerous. Do us all a favor. When you're on the road, stay off the phone. A message from CTIA, America's Wireless Companies, and the National Safety Council.
Hi, everyone. We're back on Just Believe Radio. We're talking today with Tom Moore, the author of The Gentle Way, The Gentle Way 2, and some other books, but we're going to talk about the latest book he's written, which we'll get into a little bit in a little bit. That's on extraterrestrial communication and contact. So, but before we get to that, he sent me some fascinating information that I had not had before, just last night, I think it was, on orbs. And so he wrote, I guess, is it an article, Tom?
Yes, it's an article that has appeared in several regional metaphysical magazines, and it's on my website, thegentlewaybook.com. They click on articles and news, and that's where you can find this article, and you can find all my archived newsletters that go all the way back to 2007.
All right. Well, let's talk about orbs, because I have so many clients that come in with pictures or people that send me photographs, digital photographs and things that have, they're like, is that an orb? Is that an orb? You know, and you're looking at them and it's sometimes hard for me to decipher. Sometimes I just get a sense like it is or it isn't. Other times, I think it's an obvious, like just like a reflection, you know, off of something. Or it's a, you know, possibly a dust particle or something like that. Talk to me about this article, because I read it and I absolutely loved it. I thought it was so fascinating. And you say some really great things about understanding orbs and then a little fun thing you can do to catch orbs. So why don't you just go ahead and talk about that?
Okay. Again, this started coming to me sort of like it came to you, where you had clients coming in asking about photographs. And so I was having some people send me photographs of these things. And so I didn't know what orbs were. I mean, you know, I was like anyone else. And until I started asking in this active meditation that I do. And it turns out that there are sort of like two different kinds of orbs. There is an orb of like your guides, okay? And I have to kind of give you a fill in a little information that I haven't mentioned before. Each of us have, you know, one guardian angel that's with you every single one of these 600 to 800 lives that you have on Earth on average. And then you have a main guide, and this main guide is normally from your soul group or soul cluster, as Theo calls it, okay?
Right.
And,
mm-hmm.
and so this is a main guide. Now, the guardian angels, these whole souls, have never had a physical life on Earth, and so typically they don't look like our guides when we see these orbs hanging around us. So these orbs, depending on how many Earth lives they've had, will be how intricate they are, and some of them will be very intricate. You know, if they've had a lot of lives, they'll have all these concentric circles or all sorts of neat designs within the orb. And you have to understand, our seeing ability would be considered in the universe, according to my brother on another planet, Antura. He says we're in the lower quadrant. So we have a limited eyesight, and the orbs are just above, on a level just above our ability to see them, and that's why they can be seen in photographs, because the photos will take a higher level of light than we're able to physically see. Okay, and
mm-hmm.
and so you have these very intricate orbs that are sort of hanging around, but they keep in mind, these orbs are energy with consciousness. This is very, very important. They're energy with consciousness. So this means that they can play all. They could play with the camera. If they know they're being photographed, I've even been sent photos where an orb will have a smiley face. Really hilarious, okay? Or they'll slice off one side of the orb, they'll have a flat side. Or they'll be hexagonal in shape. They'll do different things for the camera. But if you're taking photos of say, like family members all the time, you'll notice that there'll be an orb around them that will look the same all the time. And that's their probably their main guide or one of their guides that is there. And when I say guides, you have one main guide that's from your soul group, but then you'll have other guides that will come into and leave your life depending on what you're into during that time period. So as an example, when I was in the tour business, I had a couple of guides that assisted me with my tour business. When I went into the film and TV distribution business, I have a couple of guys that helped me there, and I have a couple of guys that helped me in my writing, okay? And then I know, like, my mother is one of my guides because she helps me on all things feminine because, like, 80% of the people that take my newsletter or subscribe to my newsletter are female.
Okay.
So that's the first set. Okay, those are the orbs that are more intricate. They will also be different colors. Like if you see a red orb, that's typically, and this was not in the article, this is something that I've learned and put in my newsletters since I wrote the article. But if it's a red orb, that typically means 100 lives or less that orb has been involved in. I think a blue orb is like over 200 lives. And then when you get up to 300 or more, they become very intricate. That's as near as I can remember what I said in the newsletter. And you can, the nice thing about my articles and news page is that you can do searches. So you can put in orbs and hit the search button, and it'll show you different different newsletters that I mentioned orbs, and you'd look for the very latest ones from 2013.
Okay. All right. Talk to me a little bit about, I saw in the article that you talk about staging areas.
Sure. Now, that was a real revolution to me. Hello?
You're there? Okay. I wanted you to just touch on staging areas because this was fascinating to me, and it's not something that I had really understood, well, as far as you take it in your article anyway, very well. So if you could just touch on that too.
Okay. And this was something really eye-opening, really of a surprise kind of thing to me because I'd never thought about it this way. But sometimes you'll see these photos, and you can even Google orb photos on and look at some of the ones where there's just a ton of these little almost light bulbs hanging in the air. I mean, there'll just be a ton of them. And so I ask, well, why is it, in some photos you'll just see one or two of these orbs, and in others they'll just be like 1,000. And Theo told me, he said, Tom, these photographs were taken in what are called staging areas. And what this means is that, as an example, when your lovable pooch or cat dies, they don't go to like this tunnel and all like we go to, for reviewing the lives and getting prepared for the next one. They, their little fragment of this group soul, and you have to understand there's one soul for all the dogs on earth, no matter what breed they are, and there's one soul for all the cats on earth, okay? These are group souls, so they have millions of these little fragments out there. And so when you see these little, these 1,000 orbs in a picture, they'll mostly be very simple, you know, white or a little color or something like that. And that's because this is a staging area where all these little fragments of this group soul, let's just say a dog. The dog, when it's through with this life, it goes immediately through sort of like a gray energy tube, and also sometimes guided or sort of herded by human souls who take on that duty for learning purposes for their soul, and they guide these little soul fragments to the staging area where the group soul assigns it to its next birth mother. So it could be dogs, cats, it can be birds, it can be insects. So it all depends. These are very simple soul fragments that are going to a staging area to get assigned to their next life.
That is so, so fascinating. I think that's really just really interesting to think of it as, you know, because everybody always asks that, where'd my dog go? Where'd my cat go? I mean, is it in heaven? Is it, you know? And it's kind of interesting to be able to see the separation, because obviously there would have to be some sort of difference. A dog doesn't have to review its life, I would think,
right?
Because, you know, how many, okay, well, you know, you were bad, you had too many accidents in the house. I mean, seriously, what a dog is just there to love you and be loyal to
exactly.
you, and, you know, so they don't have any.
And they're sort of reviewed a little bit. I mean, they're sort of checked on, well, you know, were you loved or were you, you know, were you hurt, you know, whatever. So there seems to be a little bit of a review, but not like, you know, we get, okay. And right. and I might mention that, and I've already done this, that you can request a benevolent outcome that the soul fragment was your lovable pooch or cat or whatever will return to you. And as Theo says, he says this very humorously. You have to understand there's a lot of humor on the other side. He says, we take it to a higher authority, and normally your MBO request will be granted. Okay, so you get that same soul fragment back again, and and so as an example, we have a dog right now. Her name is Sandy. Well, the dog, the female dog we had before, was named Sugar, and so we went to one of these Operation Kindness where, you know, it's a no-kill kind of facility, and to adopt a dog, and here was this dog named Sugar, and my son renamed her Sandy because he wanted her to be, you know, a little different than our Sugar dog.
Okay? Sure, right.
But we're positive it's the same dog, and we have a male dog, you know, named Ramsey, after Ramses, you know, Egyptian, and Ramsey was a female dog before named Tamba. Okay, so we know that they're the same dogs. They're just too close. So keep in mind, you could say I request the most benevolent outcome that my lovable pooch's soul fragment comes back to be. Thank you, and just ask for it.
Yeah, that's great. That's awesome. I just want to give the callers the call-in number again, or the listeners the call-in number. It's 347-945-7246. And if you dial that number and press 1, you'll be in our queue. And we do have somebody that's been patiently waiting. And let me just make sure that they have a question for us. Hold on 1 second. The caller calling from 713 area code. Hello, is anyone there?
Yes, I'm here. My question was, I had some pets that were incredibly close to me, and one in particular that had just a fantastic personality, and she and I really seemed to connect. And what I was wondering is, how do you make sure that you get that soul fragment back? I mean, do you just connect when you're out looking for a dog?
Well, keep in mind, when you request that benevolent outcome, these machinations start, Okay. So things start coming together, and that's one of the beautiful things about requesting benevolent outcomes, because you'll you know, you'll be out and you're thinking, oh, you know, I want a little tiny dog, but you're just so drawn to this little bigger dog, you know, you just can't help it. And that's just sort of how it works. I mean, it's like you're led to, you know, to that dog. And it's just neat the way things turn out. I mean, it may be something that you think you're going to go to a pound to, you know, to rescue a dog, and then suddenly your brother says, oh, you know, our litter just had these puppies. Would you please take one? You know, and it turns out to be your pooch. So it you know, these things work in really magical ways.
Lisa, I'm sorry I missed the start of the show, but could I just ask one more follow-up? You guys might have already covered this, but if you have time, what I was curious about is, you know, I kind of feel like we all have soulmates, and, you know, perhaps some people have more than one, but I feel like we all have soulmates. But is it possible that you can make a connection with a dog that's so strong, with that dog's fragment soul, that it could be so strong that that you're really more like soulmates? I mean, not soulmates in the sense that you are with your spouse, but just really connected?
Very rarely. I've been told that prior to having our first lives on Earth, in many cases, we might have a life as an animal, just to sort of get our toes wet, so to speak. But typically after that, we don't. And so you have this strong connection with, you know, with that dog and with that soul fragment. But again, it's a fragment of a group soul. And that's the way I understand it. Now, again, you know, I always tell people I'm only 80 to 90% supposedly on my reception, I think. And people have sort of doused on this and things like that. And I get that feedback from other people too. So I'm not perfect. I keep striving to be, but one of the things that I I'm told over and over and over again is practice, practice, practice. They want me to have more sessions per week if I possibly can. It's just that running a business is really, you know, I get up at, in order to have these sessions, I get up at 5:15, like I did this morning, Sunday morning, and I went till 6:30 when my 6:35 when my dogs were barking, and I knew I had to end the session, even though I still had more questions to ask. So that's sort of the way it goes.
Wow. Well, thank you very much. Great show, Lisa.
Thank you. Thanks for calling in.
And to get back on you know, soulmates that she brought up for
uh-huh.
just a second. We again, Theo tells me that we have 6 to 12 soul fragments in a typical soul cluster. Now, most of the time, if you have a life with another member of your soul cluster, it is so intense that you cannot live together, okay? That's that intense. Now, what actually would be more of a soulmate would be our soul group. In my case, there are 8 fragments in my soul group. Our soul group works with, I don't know if it's 2 or 3 or 5 other groups. I haven't asked that question. I need to ask that one of these days. Believe it or not, I haven't done that. You work with other soul groups, and you mix and mingle. You know, one life you'll be the father, the next life the mother, the next life the child of someone, of another fragment of that soul group.
Right.
So it's all for your learning, and you spend so many lives together, you feel like soulmates, okay? Because it's very intense. Some lives, you know, you may have very hateful, because you have to have bad lives along with the good. All of these lives have to balance. And so it's like a play where one play you're the bad guy and the next play you're the good guy. It's like that.
Right. That makes sense as well. There's a balance, I guess, to it, and which is interesting. I want to start talking about your latest book, which is called Conversations with an ET, First Contact, and it's going to be out, I guess, next month, right?
Right. You can actually buy it now on like Kindle or Barnes and Noble's Book Nook, I think it's called, or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's out in ebook form, but the printed version will be available on June 26th. So you can pre-order, like if you go to Amazon.com, just as of yesterday, they have it up for June 26th with a pre-order. So you can pre-order it at, I think the book is discounted to $15.15. So please consider buying the book, because you will read things. If you're into even science fiction, Star Trek, Star Wars, whatever, you will read things in this book you have never, ever read in any other book or seen in any TV or movie. It's quite a thorough book. And I'll kind of go in, if you wish me to, on how I made the contact.
Yeah, I do. I want to get into that. Again, the book is called Conversations with an ET, First Contact, and I've got tons and tons of questions for you about that book, starting with that question. But I want to take a quick break, we'll be back in a minute. Anyone who wants to call in with questions about anything we've already talked about or anything we're about to talk about, regarding extraterrestrial contact, you can call in at 347-945-7246 and press 1, and you will be in the queue, and we will get to you as soon as there is an appropriate moment. But for now, if everyone can hold on for me, we're going to have a quick break. Hi, this is Lisa Tarvis. I'm a metaphysician, board-certified holistic health practitioner, energy healer, intuitive, and the author of the book, Just Believe. I'm also a host on the Rightstream Network. My radio show is called Just Believe and airs every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Please stop by my website at www.lisatarvis.com. That's LISATARVES. For details on all the services I offer, information on my book, and my radio show. There are many amazing guests and fascinating topics scheduled for the show in the upcoming months. I look forward to connecting with you soon.
Imagine a world where bullying isn't considered a normal part of childhood.
A world where I'm not afraid to go to school.
To speak out.
To be myself.
A world where I'm not afraid to be caught alone.
Come on, Punk. We have the power to stop the bullying.
Speak out.
Speak up.
Educate.
Find out what to look for and how you can make a difference at bullying.org.
Bullying is not kids being kids.
It's not about good homes or bad homes.
It's not a normal part of growing up.
I shouldn't be afraid to get out of school.
To turn on my computer.
Message. A lock to my locker.
Did you know that a bully will stop his or her behavior in 10 seconds when their peers speak up?
Use your voice.
Hey, leave him alone.
We have the power to stop bullying.
Find out more at bullying.org.
Bullying.org.
Where you're not alone.
Where you're not alone.
Where you're not alone.
All right, everybody, we're back. This is Lisa Tarvis on Just Believe Radio on the Rightstream Network. Today we're talking to author Tom Moore, who is not only an author but a speaker and a CEO in his own international motion picture and TV program distribution business. out of, I guess, Dallas, right, Tom? Dallas?
Dallas area, yes.
Yeah, okay. He's the author of several books. We've already talked about The Gentle Way, A Self-Help Guide for Those Who Believe in Angels, and The Gentle Way 2, The Story Continues, which is about basically asking for benevolent outcomes in any kind of situation that you happen to be in your life. Whether it's a challenge that you're going through or a crisis or, just something that you're not sure what, maybe just something you're not sure what the right answer is for your life. So we've talked about those things, and we've talked about orbs and the fascinating thing about orbs. Before we get off the orb subject, I did see something that I really loved, which I don't think we talked about regarding the orbs thing, and then we'll close that one out. But you talked about a little exercise you can do in the article to try and maybe get some orbs in some photographs.
I sort of did the same on a recent trip in last October. To Sedona, Arizona. I requested a benevolent outcome that Theo would show up in one of my photographs, and so I did a meditation next to Oak Creek, right underneath the cathedral rock vortex area, and there was this big gray orb hanging over the water. So and when I talked to him, he said, "No problem, Tom. I'll be there," and so it was. So you can request a benevolent outcome for your.
You don't see them with the naked eye, right? This is something you have to take. You see in a photograph, correct?
Exactly. There are a few people that can see them, but from what I understand, it really takes practice. And I can't see orbs myself. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard of people seeing them. Alive, and I think that's fascinating, and probably something that you're saying, it's probably a rare thing to be able to do that. But in your article, you talked about how you can just choose a dark area, and sit and take some photographs in that dark area, and see what you get, you know. And
right,
and I think
or ask somebody to be in front of you and say I request, ask them to request a benevolent outcome for their guides to show up in the photo and see what happens.
That sounds like fun. It sounds like something I'm probably going to do one of these nights. I was like, that sounds like fun. Anyway, so now we're going to get into your latest book, which you said is already available through the e-books, on Kindle, Amazon Kindle, or on Barnes & Noble's Nook and things of that sort.
May I interject one thing here? My publisher changed the title of the book. My publisher reversed the title, so now it reads First Contact, Conversations with an ET. Okay, then.
See, that didn't know that. First Contact, Conversations with an ET is the name of the book. The book is also on Tom's website. You can actually get more information about the book and his other books at thegentlewaybook.com, which is his website.
I have sample chapters of all three books on there now. So you can read sample chapters of any of the three books.
All right. So any guests, if anybody wants to call in, you can call in at 347-945-7246, press 1, and you'll be in the queue. And we're going to go into our conversation now on First Contact, Conversations with an ET. So tell me how you came in contact with the ET that you write about in your new book.
Sure. This was during one of my active meditations. Okay. And I was talking to Theo about some old Atlantean ruins or something like that, and he said, "Well, you'll get to see these one day." And I'm thinking, okay, I said, well, do you mean me personally or do you mean you, meaning humans? And he said, no, you personally. He said, he said, you're going to get to see them with an ET. And so he said, he's tuning in right now. Would you like to talk to him? And I was so shocked. You know, I thought I was having a private conversation with my own guardian angel. And
it
turns out that I'm on a party line. You know, anybody that knows how can tune in and get these thought packets. So I said, no, let me think of some questions. And so it turns out that this ET is a member of my soul cluster, and he's had 800 lives on Earth. The last time we were together was in Atlantis, and he acted as one of the guides for part of my flock. You have to understand, back 200 years before the islands of Atlantis finally sank into the sea, I was inspired to create the Gentle Way, and I had like a million people requesting benevolent outcomes at that time that were not involved in this war between the sons of Belial and the Law of One. They stayed away from that. So several thousand of my followers and I migrated through what's now Portugal and Spain across to Egypt, which was very verdant at that time period, 12,500 or so years ago. And so he was one of my guides, one of the people that helped me move all these people to this new land, Egypt. And just as a side story, there was this Egyptian princess that when we arrived, she, in her meditation, she was told we were gentle people, we were nice people, benevolent people, and she helped us resettle. And the Egyptian princess then is my wife today.
Wow.
Okay.
How about that?
See how things tie together? Well, so
Anyway,
he and I haven't had any lives together since then, although he's had other lives on Earth since that time period. But now he's having a life on this water planet, on the Sirius B star system, where it turns out both of us came from. It turns out I've had thousands of lives there. And over the last 18 million years, by the way, their society is 18 million years old, and they're newcomers, if you can believe that. I mean, there are societies in the Sirius B star system that are over a billion years old, okay? That was very hard for me to wrap around. And later I was to learn that the Lyrans and the Vegans are over 10 to 13 billion years old. So you can imagine how old those societies are. Okay, but they're not in the Sirius B star system. They're elsewhere. And so he's an amphibian having this life on this water planet. He's part of a first contact team. And as I ask hundreds of questions of him over since 2008 when I first got together with him, he's part of this first contact team, and he's coming to Earth on one of those big, huge motherships that's a mile wide with a crew of 850. And they're coming to Earth in 2017, 2 years after the Pleiadians make first public contact in 2015. And the Pleiadians are going to do it in Russia. So that's sort of the timing that's set up right now. And, of course, with any timing, that's the highest probability. Certainly things can change, but it's pretty – he says it's getting close to being set in stone that's when they're coming.
So what's he telling you is going to happen, you know, in the upcoming, you know, months and years?
Sure. And here in 2013, in late fall, the Russians are going to release confidential files, top secret files, on their contacts with extraterrestrials. And for doing that, they're going to be the beneficiary of being the first public contact that the Pleiadians will make. Now, the Pleiadians look exactly like us. Their DNA was very, very strong when we were created by our ET uncles and aunts and fathers and mothers, whatever you want to call them. And 200 planets contributed DNA to the human Adam and Eve, if you want to call it that, the Adam man and woman. And so when I'm talking to Antura, I'm thinking, well, yeah, I'd heard that we were eventually going to get contacted and they would look just like us. So I'm saying, well, you know, I assume you look just like a human. He says, no, he says, we don't. And so he explained that he's an amphibian. And if anyone has seen the Hellboy movies, there's a character that you can Google images of called Abe Sapien, S-A-P-I-E-N, I think it is, in the Hellboy movies. And that's as close as you can get to what Antura looks like. The skin color is wrong. Naturally, the character in the movies has five fingers, and he only has four, and he has one set of gills behind his ear, and the Abe Sapien character has these big gills set sort of behind his jaw. There's lots of differences, but you know, that's as close as you can get to an image of what Antura looks like. And so I was quite surprised. He said if we don't do this preparation, there'll be fear in the streets. They'll be running away. And so that's why he's contacting me at an early stage. I'm supposed to be one of 12 grassroots contacts, contactees they're called, where they don't want to seem elitist. They don't want to just contact governments and scientists. They want to contact common people, and that's where I fall in. And something I just learned, like in the last few months before, you know, I finished the book, I'm supposed to film a documentary on board this mothership, the first documentary ever filmed on a mothership.
So when is that supposed to happen?
2017.
Okay. All right. So did he tell you what planet he's from?
Yeah, it's this water planet in the Sirius B star system. It's the third planet from their sun. There's the Sirius B, and then Sirius A is the brightest star in our night sky. So you can imagine how bright it is. So they live beneath the surface of it, but they're actually surface dwellers, and they live mostly underground because it gets so hot. If both Sirius B and Sirius A are trained at the planet at the same time, it can get really, really hot.
So does he have does he have a family? What's his life like?
He has two sons and a mate. He's about 450 years old. These are universal years. Now you have to understand, their years and our years are different. Universal years are like 1/10 the speed of Earth years. We were put into a space-time continuum, as it's called, in order for us to develop at a faster rate, in order for us to start trying to catch up with everyone else. And so 10 years of ours will go by for every one universal year.
Right.
Okay. So that was a little difficult to kind of wrap around, but we're in sort of a time loop, and so these years are flying past for us. And even when we go out to the stars, my next life on Earth, Theo tells me, will be as a female space pilot of one of 17 Earth starships, and that's going to be in 3400. We will not reach the stars until about 3250.
Okay.
When we finally figure out how to portal hop. And that's I have a whole chapter on portal hopping. But it turns out that none of these spaceships can get from one end of the universe to the other in one leap. They have to portal hop. And sometimes it might be 10 portals that they have to go through, the ship has to go through, as they go through these folds of space. I asked for a better description, and I was told, no, they can't do that. Our scientists have to figure this out on our own. But he said, the closest I can give you would be waves in an ocean. And he said, that's about the best description I'm allowed to give you.
All right.
So we pass through these portals. And Earth, he tells me, has 60 portals. And one or two of the portals actually goes to a neighboring universe. What we see out in the night sky is not all our universe. We're next door to another universe. And that's why scientists, he says, have a problem, because it seems like we're expanding and contracting at the same time. And that's because there's another universe sitting next door to ours. And as an example, one of the stars, I think, is Sagittarius. It's in the book. I have to refer you to the book, that we can actually see the other universe next door to us.
So where are the portals, like, located in like certain areas on the planet, or?
Yes, there's six.
And do we know what they are?
Okay, and so
well,
we're used to.
We got cut off for a little bit. So can you just
okay.
It over again? No, sorry, I don't know what happened. It went a little quiet for a minute.
Oh, okay. There, these 60 portals are located near the Earth's surface, and so we have people. It's like we're a Grand Central Station. We have ships going through these portals all the time. One portal may take them, you know, to maybe another planet in this solar system, and another portal will take them to another universe, and so on. One portal to our moon. So it's called portal hopping, and he says Tom, you can compare it to Southwest Airlines, and I'm thinking Southwest Airlines, and he says yes. We says we know everything about you, and he says, you know, compare it to Southwest Airlines, where you fly from one end of the country, but you have to stop a couple of times.
So how do they know so much about us and we don't know much about them?
Because
through, obviously, you and situations and people like you that have had contact.
Because between them messing up, the Earth Directive came, original Earth Directive came about when it was obvious that Atlantis was going to destroy themselves. And so everyone agreed to take a step back and not be involved with Earth, where people would know about them. We would just be left to our own. Now, the fly in the ointment comes when the Zeta Grays come along and... keep in mind, in the Zeta Grays past, they can access us because of the space-time continuum. So they were, their race was dying out, and so they came to Earth, and they started abducting people, kidnapping them, in order to use their DNA in order to impregnate and create a hybrid race, because their race was not ensouling anymore. They were cloning. That's how they were doing new bodies, and the clones were not being ensouled. And so they came to Earth and kidnapped women and would keep them for 9 or 10 months, and they'd have babies that would be these hybrids and everything. And it really, you know, lots of people were scared to death when this was happening, and because they would... their memories would be wiped of being on board these spaceships for 9 or 10 months. And of course, because they can travel anywhere in our time, they would just plop them back, you know, to the very same night that they were kidnapped. But yet their minds would be kind of messed up because their minds would be wiped of out of all these memories.
Right, right.
And so the final Earth directive came, and they told the Greys, you can't do this anymore. And I said, why did it take so long? And he said, Tom, in universal years, it didn't take long. He said it only took 2 universal years. He said, keep in mind, we had to put together all 200 planets had to agree on this change of rules because he said it had never been done before. Nobody had ever done this. And so by the time they finally got it approved, it was like 20 years had gone by of all these abductions for us.
So the abductions that are happening, are they coming, the abductions that have already been, you know, people have already talked about, you know, being part of or whatever, is that from the same planet? And are
yes.
So the same planet that Antoro's from?
No, these are Zeta Greys. These are these little guys with the big wide eyes that people have drawn all sorts
right.
of pictures of. You know,
okay,
they're 3 feet tall or whatever, and those are the Zeta Greys.
And so that's
keep
from
in mind,
a different planet or the same planet?
No, that's a whole different planet.
Okay, that's
okay.
what I thought. Okay.
Okay, so... okay, so the Zeta Greys have now been prevented. They can no longer do that. We're to be left completely alone. No more abductions, no more kidnappings, no more nothing. Now, what can happen is that, keep in mind, because we all originate from other planets, Antura tells me, you know, like I come from this water planet too, because we all originate from other planets, they can look in on us and can manipulate us in our dream time to come on board a ship from that planet or that star system, you know, just to check to see how you're doing. You know, they've got instruments that are so far millions of years ahead of ours that they can do all sorts of checks, but it's done in a dream state as compared to physically.
Right. Okay. All right. So, I was actually just thinking, like, okay. So here's a crazy question. We get you know things that happen all the time with meteorites and things that come very 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 close to the Earth's atmosphere. And do they have any control? I mean, I'm assuming their technology is pretty advanced. Do they have any control over maybe helping us not blow up or whatever?
Well, you know, the one that just had that big, huge boom in Russia?
Yeah.
Okay. Antura told me that that one of the Federation ships did fire a missile with a non-explosive warhead or whatever you want to call it and blew that thing up so it wouldn't. It wouldn't do any more damage than it was going to.
So are they specifically protecting Earth, or are they protecting
yes.
all the planets?
No, they're specifically protecting Earth. Now, you have to understand, the Federation, and this gets into like the old Star Wars, there really truly was a Star Wars several million years ago, okay? And this Federation of 200 planets, which is just in this quadrant of the Milky Way, there's other federations. There's like at least 5 or 6 other federations in other parts of the Milky Way alone, all of which are friendly to each other, with the exception of one federation that wants to be left alone, and so they are. They're just, you do what you want to do, and as long as it doesn't bother us, kind of thing. And but anyway, several million years ago, these planets, before they were a federation, were attacked by a reptilian race from another galaxy who wanted to take over planets for their ores and gyms or whatever. I mean, things that they needed, you know, for themselves. And so there was this big Star Wars that was even much nastier than anything portrayed on a movie screen. As an example, Antura said that if they wouldn't just destroy a planet, they would go in and destroy the sun. And so the sun, naturally, all the planets in that solar system would be destroyed with billions of inhabitants killed. It was really a nasty war.
Right.
Everybody's lovey-dovey, and Antura says on his mothership there's actually going to be two reptilians that are coming, because one of the ways they were able to bring peace is that the reptilians were allowed to have souls, to have Earth lives too. In fact, one of my friends has a reptilian soul, and I was told that they sort of made sure he would be one of my friends so that I could see how reptilian souls were handling Earth lives.
Right, right. Well, we're coming to the end, last 15 minutes of the show, so I want to make sure you get a chance to, any last thoughts, anything we didn't cover that you want to talk about, give you a couple minutes for that. And then obviously, give all your information about how people can learn more about you, find your books, and et cetera. So if you have just a few last minute thoughts or whatever.
No, now? I thought
we were
going to break. Okay.
No more break.
What? 2 minutes? 3 minutes? What?
Yeah, we have plenty of time. Just go ahead and
Well, let's kind of in summary go on a couple of things. First of all, there's requesting benevolent outcomes. Now, whether you think I'm, crazy as a coot with this Star Wars stuff or communicating with an ET or whatever, the modality of requesting benevolent outcomes is the best modality I have ever found in many years. It's better than anything. If you've ever watched The Secret movie, it's better than anything there. It's better than the Law of Attraction. It works, and it works perfectly within your soul contract. And if a benevolent request doesn't seem to work, it's because something better is coming along for you. If you request a benevolent outcome for a certain job and you don't get it, it's because you're going to get a better job down the way. So keep that in mind. And I have lots and lots of information on my website at www.thegentlewaybook.com. I have a blog that I have each week with nothing but MBO stories. These are stories sent to me from all over the world of people that are using this in their daily lives, and it works for them, and it'll work for you. I guarantee it. So you just start with the mundane requests, the easy ones that you get immediate feedback, and make it a habit, because you'll find it works even in dangerous situations. I've had a lady tell me she lives out in the country in Kansas. A tornado was bearing down on her house. She grabbed the kids, headed for the basement, and requested a benevolent outcome, and the tornado passed right over her house. So it's amazing what MBOs can do and how strong they are. So give that a try. If you don't buy one of my books or anything, try. You can go to my website. I have a couple of sample chapters of that first book that will get you on the road. It'll give you suggestions for simple mundane requests that you can do. Okay, that's number one. Number two, of course, is the second book, and that has all these stories in it of people, and it's done by topics. So there's topics on work and travel and you name it. And on my website, again, I have newsletters. You can sign up for my weekly newsletter, and you can send in questions for me to ask. But do searches on my articles page first because perhaps I've already covered that topic and you'll be able to read it and not wait a couple of weeks for a reply from me. And then first contact conversations with an ET. I realize this may seem like a a very far out subject. Sorry, I'm having to have some water. It may seem like a far out subject, but I've always been a catalyst. In all my lives, I'm always known as a catalyst that I keep coming back to push people along to raise your vibrational levels and to help you along. That's my soul contract. Oh, I'm sorry to lose my voice.
I've been having you talk for too long. That's why. It's almost 2 hours, so you've been talking a long time.
Yeah. So, anything else?
I think this has been such an awesome show, and we've covered so many different topics and throughout this couple of hours. So, just everyone again, we've been talking to Tom Moore. He is the author of The Gentle Way, a self-help guide for those who believe in angels, and The Gentle Way 2, The Story Continues. He does have a weekly newsletter. He does have a blog, and he is coming up with his coming out with his third book, which is already available in ebook format, but will be available, I guess, in hard copy in June. It is called First Contact: Conversations with an ET. And I think I'm gonna, no matter what you're interested in, there's so many different aspects of this, and basically Tom is able to get this message, to get these messages through a process that most of us would call channeling, but I guess it's basically in a meditative state. So if you want to learn more about Tom, you can find him at www.thegentlewaybook.com. Again, that's www.thegentlewaybook.com. And Tom, it's been fascinating. I hope you can come back another time, and we can, maybe focus on one area, and maybe something with your new book soon, and talk even more about that. I when I advertised the show, I advertised it as more being about the Gentle Way series, because I didn't know about the new one when I did that. And now I think we could get a whole new audience, interested in your First Contact book. So I hope you can come back sometime soon. And I thank you very much for being on my show. It's been really, really interesting.
Great. Thanks for having me, Lisa. And everyone have a most benevolent Sunday. Thank you. And a week.
Thanks, Tom. Great talking to you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, everyone, that was a great show today. Every week, Just Believe Radio airs at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. I have amazing guests on every week covering fascinating subjects, just like we did today. Next week's guest, I'm starting a double thing next week. I'm going to start having two guests on per show. So next week is going to be interesting because we're going to be touching on two very different subjects, which, of course, this is perfect for me because, of my not being able to really stay focused on one thing for very long. But next week I'm going to have K.W. Kessler, who's the author of Demonology 101, on the show. And Nicole, and I'm going to butcher her name, I know it, but it's G-U-I-L-L-A-U-M-E, and I'll learn how to pronounce her name this week, I promise. She is the author of a book called Decoding the Pendulum, Becoming a Psychic in Seconds. So I think these are going to be two very fascinating guests, and most of my shows from next week on are going to be double shows. So we're going to have a couple of guests covering different topics. So I'm really excited about that, and hopefully I can manage it and not screw everything up pushing the wrong buttons. So anyway, don't forget to check out my website at www.lisatarvis.com, where you'll find links to my Facebook pages, my Twitter page, my LinkedIn page, and links where you can find my book called Just Believe. Until next week, everyone, have a very happy, safe week, and please find some joy every day in your life. Thanks for listening, and have a blessed week.